Welcome to Watermark's Church Leadership Podcast, a conversation with church leaders for church leaders. I'm your host, John McGee. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, hey, friends, welcome back. We are in the studio. I think this is part, is this five, Dave?
Sure, our series? Five.
So apparently, there were a plethora of things we did not learn in seminary. And so the title of this whole series is Things We Didn't Learn in Seminary. I think as much as anything, Dave, is just kind of an excuse to talk about wisdom we picked up, mistakes we've made, and a chance just to kind of hang out as friends, you know, and talk to some of the people that are willing to listen. So we're going to talk about kind of some personal interactions here in a second. But we're coming into baseball season, and you were one of my friends that probably is the biggest baseball fan. You have the inside scoop. So heard it here first. Who do you predict is going to win the World Series this year?
Yeah, I'm not proud of this prediction because I'm not really happy about it, but I think it's going to be the Dodgers.
Okay.
Yeah. They're loaded. They are loaded. So unless something catastrophic happens, I think they have the inside track. Okay. We'll see. It's a long season.
It is a long season.
Sometimes you put a bunch of all-stars together and the chemistry doesn't work, but we'll see.
Speaking of all-star, the all-star game is in Dallas this year. Has that ever happened? I don't even know.
I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It has.
So we got that to look forward to. And I'm going to be in Chicago. We'll actually see a Cubs game this year. So that's always, no matter
Wrigley's
how bad. Wrigley's
the best. Have you been before?
Yeah. I have been. Yeah. And funny story, I'd been actually to lots of games and at Wrigley. I took my family up there several years ago as we went to see, you know, a game in every major league ballpark. And we were there and the Cubs came back in dramatic fashion, you know, and I told the kids, hey, let's go. And all of a sudden they started singing Go Cubs Go, you know, which is what they sing at the very end after a win. And I looked around, I was like, what is going on? And the guy behind me goes, yeah, that's what we sing, you know, and we win. And it occurred to me that I had never seen the Cubs win. I'd probably seen, you know, five, six, seven games.
Yeah.
I'd never seen them win. I didn't know the protocol.
You don't sing songs when they lose,
I didn't know the protocol. Yeah. And so we sang around. We had, it was like one of our favorite memories in Chicago was singing, Go Cubs Go. So not very germane at all to what we're talking about here. So with no clutch, we'll switch right into the, you know, into the topic. So Dave, we wanted to talk about just things that, you know, that we didn't learn from a book. We didn't learn in any seminary class. It's just kind of this art of pastoral interaction, the people side of this, which really is so much of, you know, the pastoral work or really leadership in general. I guess, you know, if you were a coder in a foreign country, you worked remote, you knock out your code and somebody puts some note in the margin and you never talk to him. So minus that guy, all of us are going to have to use personal interaction, the skills we pick up. We're going to have to learn from the mistakes that we make in our quest to become, you know, the most effective leader that we can with the gifts that God's given us. So when I think about personal interactions, unfortunately, one of the ones I think of, the categories I think about first is criticism. And I think about that in the church. I don't know if that's where you go first, but let's talk about, you know, what you've learned about criticism, what young leaders, old leaders, you know, need to be focused on, how they can get better at handling this, how they can have frameworks to think about that. So what are your thoughts on the topic of criticism, mistakes made, lessons learned, or, you know, if you have any stories, that'd be helpful.
I've got too many stories to draw upon, so I may not get to any of them. Man, this is the universal thing, right, John? I mean, this is something everybody experiences in ministry. So this is not something that's unique to a few and then most people don't know this. Everybody receives criticism. It just seems to go with the territory. And I do think that how you respond to criticism really provides a mirror into your own soul. And I think it ultimately reflects how secure you are, not in your skills, not anything else other than who you are in Christ. So I think it's a big, big deal. And I think that I did so poorly with this early on. I wanted to defend every criticism, whether it was worth defending or not. And I was slow to hear, and I was quick to speak, which is the inverse of what we ought to be.
That's
and so,
right.
Yeah, I just felt demoralized when I was criticized, and I felt a lot of shame, and I felt a lot of anger, and I felt all those things. And I didn't, even in the times when I bit my tongue, I think it was very clear on my countenance that I wasn't doing well.
Yeah.
The point that I would see people come in to give it and then back off and think, okay, I'm just going to drop this conversation and walk away. And then I don't know how you respond to criticism. I may not respond immediately, but I would have conversations in my mind for days.
Totally.
Right. Reenact the scenario. I wish I would have said this. I wish I would have had this comeback.
Yeah.
I wish I would have come up with this defense. And then you learn over time, hey, this is really a tool God gives us to not only be humble, because I think that's exactly what it does, right? You know, Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians 12 when he talks about God's grace being sufficient as weakness. One of the things he mentions is insults. And sometimes criticism can be insulting. Mm-hmm. It's not always constructive.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that, we have this opportunity to experience the love and power of God in our lives. But it's always an opportunity to grow, to be humble, and to learn. I think I'm one of these people who really does believe there's something to be gained in every form of criticism almost. There's a few things like, okay, I can't own that, but yeah, there's something to learn in it. And so I think it took me too long to get there. And over time, I don't know that there are many times that I respond in a way that broke relationship, but what I would do with withdraw mm-hmm. relationship, mm-hmm. which breaks it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. Yeah, I resonate with just about everything you said there. I think... especially, you know, again, there's this idea that we're on a journey here. And so if you go, well, I just don't handle this really well, that's okay. You're at this point in time and you can get better over time in the way they handle this. So a couple of mistakes I made, I think, early on was I thought there was no difference between criticism and constructive feedback. And so I mm-hmm. took both of those equally, thinking that if someone was criticizing, it was actually just constructive feedback. And it wasn't. Sometimes there's just they're just critics, you know, and so you want to discount that to some extent. But again, I like what you said. There's probably something to be learned from everybody. If you push someone's button and it makes them mad or they're discouraged or confused or something and they come at you, there probably actually is a kernel of truth. However, I would say another mistake I made is I gave equal weight to all feedback and all criticism.
Yeah.
And now what I've learned to do is kind of, you know, weight them differently. Meaning that, you know, Dave, if you came to me and said, hey, John, I've got some feedback for you, or you didn't handle this very well, that carries a lot of weight to me. Now, a random out of nowhere email or, you know, some kind of, you know, metaphorical drive-by shooting with criticism, someone just walks up to me and says, hey, you know, yeah, I didn't appreciate this. I'm like, tell me again your name. You know, I can't remember. I weight that differently. I used to weight them all the same. I think another mistake I used to make is I saw so many people, leaders, make this this mistake, and it's not who I wanted to be when I started out. Was they would fight any criticism that came. They just kind of, you know, metaphorically put up their hands and were ready to fight. And so there wasn't an issue of, you know, is there a kernel of truth for me to listen to? It was, how can I stay in the ring with you until you basically really apologize for even bringing this up, you know? And they would say, that's not true, that's hurtful, you know, you're being divisive, all those kinds of things, until that they could get the other person. I watched that a couple times and go, man, whatever I do, you know, for the rest of my life, I don't want to operate that way. And so then what I would do is I would actually take, you know, that criticism or feedback, and I would say, rather than fighting them, I would, again, kind of make sure it was true, and I would internalize it, and I would just go, oh my gosh, you know, I've got a character flaw, or I'm not very good at X. And it would just kind of wreck me in a way that I honestly was not healthy, because I so did not want to be that arrogant, you know, street fighter that I had seen. I wanted to be humble, and I wanted to, you know, hear from other voices as if, you know, God was speaking to me. And I internalized it in a way I don't think that was helpful. And so I assumed it was true. I would get kind of emotionally wrecked. That's probably too strong. Sometimes I would be. And now what I've learned to do, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, just kind of hold it off to the side. If someone I didn't know gave me some feedback, gave me some criticism, those kinds of things, I would, you know, I might thank them for it. I'd repeat back, this is what I heard you saying. And I'd almost, like, you know, I'm holding my hand here open, and I would just kind of hold it off to the side. Like, take that criticism, take that feedback, and you know, affirm that I did hear them, thank them, but I'm not yet going to decide that that's true and begin then to interact with it and begin to kind of, you know, go to my journal and ask my wife what she thinks. I'm just going to go, I heard what they said. Let me think about that. Let me ask some trusted people. And it's just saved me the emotional roller coaster, if that makes sense. So, and there's a resiliency, I think, the first, you know, we're all pretty fragile people.
Yes,
and
we are.
And the more criticism you get, if you are mature, like you said, in Christ, I think you can handle a little bit more. So every leader is on a journey on this one, and I would encourage you not put your hands up and look to fight. I'd also encourage you not to internalize everything and you know, make it true and think that somehow you aren't the right person for the job. There's this wisdom in just kind of handling this middle ground. If you lead, you'll be criticized. That's that's kind of how that goes. And just realizing that, because I guess the other thing I would add, and if you have any other thoughts on the topic, but the idea of critics' math, you know, if you've heard that, you know, so
everybody what that means.
Yeah. So 100, you know, affirmations plus one criticism equals one criticism.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how, you know, you could get literally, you could get 10 emails saying that was fantastic, thank you so much. And one person goes, I didn't appreciate that. And that, that really is what you get in your car, you know, on the way home and think about. And beat yourself up or things like that. And so just remember that all of the positive feedback is true as well. And it probably honestly takes a little bit more thoughtfulness to write positive feedback to walk up to someone and say that. Someone who's hot is going to be really quick, you know, to be a keyboard warrior and fire off something like that. So, you know, the you could probably add a multiplier to some of the encouragement you get. You know, there's probably a lot of people that actually think that, they just haven't thought about saying it. And you can probably divide the criticism by something, because you probably are hearing from most people in any organization that are really ticked off. You've heard from all of them. You haven't heard from everybody who thinks it's great. You know, like, yeah. Hey, the fact that I'm here means that I think you're doing a great job. You know, I just didn't think to tell you this week. So we're all on a journey. You can't learn that in a book. Some of that is just going to be the art and paying attention to your own soul, learning from others, talking out, having an older, wiser person to talk this out with. And you can just go, hey, I've been there. You're going to make it. You know, I've been criticized too. They can tell you a story and how they walk through it. So any other thoughts?
Yeah, on this one? That last point is so, so important, John, that you don't have to be the final arbiter of what criticism means. It really is helpful when you have people around you who you can take the criticism to. Hey, this is what this person said. Here was the context. Maybe it's a private conversation. And do you see the same thing? Do you not? Are there things I need to work on here? Yeah. It just frees you. It frees you from having to live alone in some of the pain of criticism, but it also frees you from having to be having to be the one who ultimately decides whether or not it's valid. You know, mm-hmm. I had somebody tell me one time, and it was so true, you know, that somebody looked me in the eye and said, hey, you need to let go of the fact that you know yourself better than anybody else, because quite frankly, you don't. There's this part of you that's aspirational, that guides the way you think, sure. And your bias, you know, and you need to let others speak into who you are, because they probably know you better than you know yourself. And I found that to be true. And so having people you can go to and say, this is it, especially for those that are in point leadership roles, if somebody comes to you and either criticizes you in the category, hey, this is air, or this is heretical in the things you're saying, or even your character is such that it disqualifies you, you've got to escalate that criticism. Yep. You don't want to bear that alone. That's not good for you. That's not good for the person who's bringing it to you. And it's not good for, you need to let people know, hey, I need to share this with others. Would you be willing to share what you shared with me with others? I'm going to take this and we'll get back to you, because those are serious criticisms.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And it, that's right. That's another podcast. There's some criticism is, I didn't like that word choice or your shirt, you know, that's different than a character criticism as well. And I'd be quick to share those, you know. It's like, that is potentially true. Let's just show, let's put some light on it and let some other people know. And we can just be aware of that way as we, you know, lead in community. Let some other people know, hey, I got this feedback. It may or may not be true, but I don't want it to be true. And so let's throw some light on it. Can you guys just, you know, watch this with me? So good. Okay. So, well, I don't want to turn this into a 2-hour podcast on criticism, which I think we could do. Dave, and just thinking about personal interactions, one thing I've heard you talk about, you know, as being a young church planter, is just setting expectations for people and just kind of the wisdom of how to do so. And again, I don't even know if you've got, you know, definitive talking points, but can you just talk through that idea of expectations and in light of just kind of personal interactions, what you've learned, mistakes made, wisdom you can pass on?
Absolutely. And I think this is, John, I think this is the make or break thing for most leaders. There are a few people that are so exceptionally gifted that they might be the person who, what they do is speak, and their speaking abilities are so profound. The personal interactions are almost viewed in light of that. Well, you know, this person may be rough interpersonally, but man, they have this gift, or she has this gift. But for almost everybody else in the world, those of us that aren't exceptional, this is what makes or breaks your impact in ministry, is the way you relate to people. So I don't think we can heighten how important this concept is. We have to be. When I came out of seminary, I thought that what we really were, you know, if a secular person was to look at what we do, I'd think they'd look at us and say, hey, you're in the idea business. What you're doing is you have a competing idea, that idea being the gospel, and you're, yeah. I don't really think that's, you know, if people were to ask, like, what business are you really in, who didn't understand what church was, we're in the people business, meaning that at the end of the day, our job is to interact with people in a meaningful way. So it's that important. Here's my story when I was a young church planter, and this is going back to the expectations issue. We were so desperate for warm bodies to fill the church. You know, everything from volunteerism to the budget to every, you know, when you're planting and you're starting from scratch, every person is so important. And there's a critical mass to doing church the way that we tend to do it here in the, at least in the U.S., that you need so many people. And so, sadly, I was probably the used car salesman of church planting. Like, what's it going to take to get you into this new church plant today? And I would overpromise and underdeliver. In other words, I would create an expectation, probably, if you wanted to use broad categories of accessibility and personal service to people, that I was inevitably going to fail them. And when you fail people in that way, it's a dangerous thing to do, because there's times in which the spiritual leader in their life and their concept of who God is to them through that spiritual leader really gets twisted and dark if you disappoint them. And so, yeah, I learned very early on through a lot of painful failure, you've got to be very clear as to what people can expect of you and what you can deliver, but you also want to know what they expect. And there's an opportunity for actually building relationship through that conversation around, this is what I do here, this is how I serve you, tell me what you think, and let's talk about our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because people do come through the front door with, whether you like it or not, for the first time with very clear expectations of who you may be to them.
That's
very
right.
Few people come in with a neutral place. Most people have a frame of reference of, this is what a pastor is, this is who a leader is to be to me, and it's important to set those things.
Yeah, that's
set
good.
Those expectations straight.
That's really good. Well, we can't replay the tape, but Dave, my hunch is actually there wasn't anything malicious in those conversations in your heart. Like you believed in what you were doing and would literally do anything you could to make this thing go, you know? And so you weren't doing it.
I didn't understand my capacity.
Right.
Then.
That's it.
You know, I thought I had this unlimited relational capacity.
Yes.
And then you realize as you disappoint people and hurt them, which is the last thing none of us gets into ministry because we want to hurt people. We want to actually help them.
Yeah.
So it was a real sobering experience, but I had to learn, like, I only have so much energy to give in general. And I'm a little bit more introverted than probably the average pastor. And so I have to grow, of course, but I also have to work within my limitations and make it really clear. And then I think there's this cultural aspect to this too. Like, there's a way in which interpersonal relationships, just not the way we interact as leaders with the people, but the way the people interact together, that it's really up to us to kind of define and promote and guard as we lead in the culture of the church.
Yeah, that's really good. So yeah, we get in trouble when expectations are unrealistic. If people just have these expectations, they're just like no one can do that, right? Another one, you know, is that they're just really unrealized or unmet, I think. And so people have an expectation that they think is reasonable, but it's not met. And that's when, you know, you get all kinds of reactions, or be anger or sad or, you know, something like that. The best way, I think, you know, to handle all that is just to be really clear about what it is that you can do, and be clear about your expectations. And in this instance, you're talking about kind of relational availability, and just say, this is how this church operates. And as you get larger, there's going to have to be some, you know, Exodus 18 Jethro principle where you're going to end up, if you don't have something in place, you're going to end up frustrating everybody.
That's right.
You know, you're going to be worn out and they're going to be frustrated. And so you just set up some type of mechanism to, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, but some kind of organizational structure that everyone is cared for, but they may or may not be cared for by you as either the leader of the church or leader of this ministry or something like that, someone that they want to get time with. And so, of course, you have to be available always first and foremost to the people that you are leading with is where you want to be available. And so, but you can't be, you probably can't go see every person who's in the hospital and, you know, every Johnny's first T-ball game and all that kind of stuff. You can't. You can only do that for a limited number of people. So I think that's relational, you know, kind of capacity. I think also in terms of like the work, the amount of work that you would be able to deliver, the on tasks, projects, you know, things like that. You'll end up frustrating a lot of people if you continue to be the person that says yes because you want to, because you believe in what you're doing, and then you don't deliver. It really, really erodes trust, and now you become the guy that doesn't keep his word. And he had every intention at that moment of keeping your word, but you now become the guy that isn't trustworthy, which is very different than saying, I would love to, I just don't think I've got the margin at this point. Can we think about some other creative solutions? Okay, now you're setting expectations. There's no gap in them, and no one becomes frustrated. So, yeah, and, you know, I think every person who believes in what they're doing is going to want to say and promise whatever it takes to get the thing off the ground. And I was just laughing when you were sharing. We had a video in the early days of Watermark. It was called Me Church. And did you ever see? Did you ever
no,
see it?
I'll go back. And it was still amazing. On YouTube. Probably
it was amazing. And so, and the premise being that, you know, basically we weren't going to make it a church about you, the individual, and the, you know, and that was just kind of a parody on the absurdity of that. And so it was all these people just saying, this is basically their stipulations to join the church, you know, and one sweet lady in the congregation, she's like, if I join this church, I want to make sure every Sunday my car is washed, you know. And so we, and then the character would come on and say, not only that, but we'll give you a wax and a buff, you know. And so it was just all these people with their terms. And the very last one was this kid, and he goes, you know, if I join the church, I want a pony. And the very last thing was, look in your backyard. And he drops his bike and goes back and running. You know, so just the absurdity that, hey, we'll do anything we can, and you'll wear yourself out. And don't do that. It's interesting that's one of the ones you wanted to talk about here, Dave. Like, I've heard you repeatedly mention that, and so I think there's something there about expectations. Let's talk about just conducting ourselves online.
Yeah.
In meetings, at the pulpit, with a microphone, mistakes made. You don't have to give your biggest blunders. You could talk hypothetically about what other leaders have done in this. But any thoughts on just kind of this personal interactions, both online and, you know, kind of one to many?
Yeah, man, there's this idea of there's perception and there's reality. And I think what we can miss in our culture today, because of such a high online presence and everybody is getting sound bites and video clips, is in some ways perception becomes reality. And what I found is probably through coaching other pastors, when they run into some trust issues with their congregation, there's ways in which very inadvertently they're communicating themselves, whether it's online through their social media or the way that they dress or the way that they interact, they're communicating something they don't intend to communicate that's being received, and it's has really negative, devastating effects. And so you just need to know that, you know, when you're a leader, you never take that hat off.
Yeah.
You know, at the grocery store, people are going to see you as their pastor. You know, whatever you do, it's a lifestyle. It's more than a job. There's a job attached to it, but it is a lifestyle. And so the way in which you conduct yourself is really important. And I think it's really good to get feedback. Again, most of the mistakes that I made, some of them were super obvious. Like, yeah, I almost sensed the Holy Spirit saying, don't say that, don't do that, don't wear that, you know, don't post that, don't hit send. And but then there's other times where it's just been totally innocent. Like, I had no idea I was coming across that way with that statement. I had no idea that I was presenting myself in that way. And so I know we got to be really careful to think in terms of branding and image and all that, because that can be really distorted. I think what you want to do is you want to conduct yourself in a way that amplifies the gospel and not distracts from it.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can inadvertently, and even sometimes we can intentionally do that. And those aren't good things.
You know, we've got kind of the absurdity of, you know, preachers and sneakers, kind of that,
sure.
You know, I've got that caricature, but my hunch is that's not exactly what you're talking about. When you think about online,
So I think there's things you can post online, right? There's, you know, whether it's through Instagram or Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, whatever your thing is, TikTok, there's ways in which you can present yourself that.
Do you have a TikTok account?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm an old man.
I just had to know right then. Okay, great. No. Perfect.
Do you?
Do I have a TikTok account? Yes. So probably I can watch my dumb videos my kids send me. But that's another.
I have some questions for you.
I think you meant, have I posted a TikTok? The answer is no. But it doesn't mean
you're just there to spy and creep.
I sure hope some pastors are that are listening to this are posting on TikTok, because that's where, you know, that's where a lot of people live. So yeah. I had to know this. So guys that are posting, you were talking about, I think yeah, they were incongruent with, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, whatever. So it might be a post online, you know, that you're making a statement about something. You limited characters in that space is just not the space to have in-depth conversation, mm-hmm. especially nuanced things. Yeah. You want to say, yay, the Cowboys won, you know, great, or I'm really blue because there's a 28th year without a Super Bowl, which is more real. There's very few yay the Cowboys won. Fine. That's going to be – people are going to take that the way they're going to take it. But if you weigh in on a political subject, if you weigh in on a cultural issue, that's just not a good venue for interaction. And you may be misunderstood, or you may have said something that was just – lends itself towards misinterpretation and misunderstanding. So be careful with that. And then I think back. This would have been – You would have been around these days, John. You would have remembered probably this. There was a time when I was a part of a network, and we dressed a lot in flannel and jeans oh, yeah. and boots.
Spot you a mile away.
You know, it was that time like when all the Ed Hardy stuff was out, and so you could like have skulls and crossbones and these weird shirts that had super busy, so different from today. And I remember one time actually preaching at a men's retreat with something, and this gentleman came up to me afterwards and said, "Do you realize that's a cultic sign for death, don't you? Like, you're talking about the resurrection, and all I can see is you're wearing this thing that's promoting death and morbidity." And I'm like, I didn't know that. Like, sorry. You know, I wish I would have thought about that yeah. because that's not helpful to the guy. I know you can't please everyone all the time. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But there are ways in which you can present yourself, whether that's what you post online, how you dress, the way you speak to people. The way you maybe make offhanded comments when you're preaching or you're making announcements, whatever it is, that can actually be a big distraction yeah. to what you ultimately want to be representing. And so get input, be careful.
Be thoughtful,
be intentional.
Be slow. When in doubt, don't post. Yeah, you don't. Know that I think it's so interesting. A lot of guys, and I actually really appreciate this. They want to, in the cultural moment, reply to things, but they just sometimes are not thoughtful. So I appreciate the, you know, their desire to jump in really quickly, but right. then, you know, they have to delete your post. So I'd ask, you know, how often do you have to delete something that you post up, you know, or retract something you said? If it's very often, like there's, or if it happens, like there's, make sure that you understand what happened, like the process that led you to that, so that you don't have to repeat, you know, that same mistake. And so I've seen people, this is a classic one for preachers. There's an illustration that just there may be something about it. Maybe it's off color. Maybe it's not 100% true, something, but it's just such a great illustration. And they'll kind of run that by some people, and they'll say, "Hey, do you think I should share this?" And they'll go, "No, I wouldn't, you know, and here's three reasons why." And they go, "But it's just such a great illustration, you know." And then they ended up sharing it, and, you know, caused the firestorm that their friend told them that it would. And so if that's happening to you, you just got to make sure that, you know, you're learning from that. Like when multiple people tell me that, and you can't desire to be interesting, more than you desire to be true and helpful and God honoring. And it's okay if your illustration is like good enough, but not enough that it, you know, it brings oohs, ahs, or claps or cheers or whatever kind of emotion you're trying to elicit from the crowd. Like, It just made the point, and it wasn't quite as interesting or noteworthy enough to talk about over lunch. I've just seen some people, they just can't let go, you know, of this illustration or maybe this idea or something. And so ask, I think, how is this going to age? You know, how am I comfortable letting this stand for 20 years? And, you know, I just heard it. I won't out who it was, but you know, I heard a famous preacher who's now deceased, godly, great communicator, was speaking on sex, which is absolutely appropriate that you need to do that from the pulpit, but it just kind of got carried away with some joking. It wasn't super off color, but he just kind of kept going, and you know, and someone posted it as an example of what not to do, and you listen to that and you go, I bet you he wished he had just made the point, you know, if he needed to tell something, just add some levity, that's great. But the fact that he just kept going hurt him, honestly. And so people will laugh in those moments, but you're eroding trust after the fact. And so just being really careful, I think, about what you say. And when in doubt, don't, you know. And we've all had those moments, like where you get the Holy Spirit check you just talked about. and you go, man, I can listen, I can attune my ear to this so that when I hear this prompt, when I hear this check in my spirit, I obey it, or I'm just going to push it down. And bad things will happen repeatedly. You will basically develop a habit of learning how to really push down the voice of the spirit, or be very, very attuned to it. You're training yourself to that. And that's the personal little interactions, you know. And here's one, Dave, just like that I've noticed, is how to relate to people that are going to take the other side of your idea, or they're going to leave, either your staff, your church, those kinds of things. And in those moments, especially someone with spiritual authority, I found myself going, I can look them in the eye and tell them something to the effect, like, this is what God wants you to do. Like, as a spiritual authority in your life, I think I can get you to stay. I think I can get you to agree to be a part of this thing, whatever it is. And I don't know that I've ever done that. I may have, but I know that I would have wrestled with that previously, and now I don't. Like, if I feel like I'm going to now cross the line and play the God card on them, not what's best for them, not what's honest and true, but I'm going to somehow be manipulative with my words, my personal interactions here, I've learned just to say no. I'm not going to. Where I can really get tempted is if someone's going to leave my team. I find that wrestling, and I'm not going to do that. I can get them to stay. I think I could. Someone is processing leaving or going to a new position or something. I can get them to stay, I think, in the short term. They probably would leave anyway, and instead I can build a bridge that they could walk back across from. And they trust me. They feel like I'm for them. I didn't manipulate them in any way. And if they want to leave my team and come back a year later, they will have said the interactions on the way out really built trust. And I'd love to come back and work here, rather than, man, I'm so glad I tried to once. I got manipulated and stayed. Now I finally got out, and I'm never coming back. And so there's just that personal interaction, that integrity, listening to the spirit. I see it in others. I can be tempted myself, because back to the very beginning, Dave, because we care about what we're doing so much,
right?
You know? Any other thoughts on that?
No, I think what's the foundation of that, John, is I think especially as we start out, we just don't realize how weighty our words are.
Yeah, that's it.
People respect the position you have, and with that position comes a lot of authority, and with that authority comes a lot of weight. And so, you know, your words are weighty, so let them be intentional, let them be few. It's just, and it's easy. It's easy because so often, especially for those who are preaching, you're communicating God's word from a pulpit in a very formal way. It's easy sometimes to take the weight of that position, and when you're having a private conversation, in ways you may not even fully realize, play the God card.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
As if, hey, the thing I'm about to tell you has every bit as much weight as what I've been sharing for the pulpit. And we would all say, those are two very different things, right? Unless you're reading scripture to them.
Yeah, right.
All we're talking about now is your own wisdom and your own personal opinions,
yes.
You know? And so, but yeah, I've hurt people in ways that have been really hard. And by God's grace, most of the time we've been able to circle back and make things right. But yeah, your words are, that's, it took me a long time to steward my words well, because I didn't, almost like a really sharp knife, I didn't realize how weighty they were, and got to be really careful with that.
That's right. Yeah. You're not in, you know, the high school locker room cutting up with your friends. Yeah. When you say something, when you use sarcasm, like it lands with different, you know, weight. When you conversely, the encouragement probably means, if you're in any kind of spiritual authority, it means a whole lot more than you think it will.
Yeah.
And someone will attack, they will come back to you 10 years later and say, you know, that I was down, you talked to me and you looked me in the eye and said, you know what? I don't know if you see this about yourself, but this is true, or this is who you're becoming, or I think you embody this verse. They will hold on to that. You will forget it. You'll forget it by lunch, and they will remember that. You know, your words really do have weight, both positively and negatively. That's really good. And the quicker you figure that out, the more you can wield that power for good in people's lives. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Dave, I was thinking about just older leaders, pastors who get people. They get what makes them tick. They can walk into a room, size it up, understand who's there, their motivations, their fears, and just begin to walk into that and really lead with a lot of skill. It's amazing to me to watch some of those men and women who are older than me who have honed that skill. And And I think one of the ways I'd want to kind of end this podcast is to, you know, just to remind our leaders, it is a skill that is practiced, you know, and you can watch someone else and go, I can never get there. And just remind yourself that they had a journey to get there with the interpersonal stuff. And I think about, I don't know why I'm thinking about this illustration now, but someone who's cooked a ton, a chef, apparently, you know, they can be in a kitchen, I think a big kitchen with all kinds of pots and pans and things like that. And they know their ear when they hear something, you know, frying in the pan, like a piece of fish or something like that, they know based on the sound how done it is.
Interesting.
Right? Now, yeah. To me, I have no idea. I'm going to ballpark it or I'm going to take a thermometer out. Those are my only two options, right? But I guess if I had cooked, you know, 2,000 pieces of salmon, I would know based on, you know, the sound, how well it's done. It's the same thing in anything in life, including, you know, people. And so I just want to make a plea that if you know great leadership principles and tactics, or if you went to seminary and you learned great exegesis tools and skills, and you can, you know, you did great in homiletics, which is your preaching, you also have to pay attention to this art form of just leading people. And I don't know how you feel about all the personality tests. I found many of them helpful at some degree, you know, so the Myers-Briggs, just knowing, you know, what makes people tick, their proclivities, you know, kind of in this binary way across different axes. Everyone's got a take on the Enneagram. I've not gone down the rabbit hole, but I know that it helps some people articulate what they're good at, what their motivations are. Working genius is a tool that a lot of organizations are using right now. And there's just some truth in all of them. And the quicker you can kind of get your arms around those or other tools, you can begin to understand, okay, when I'm dealing with this person is not like the other person that I was just with 1 hour ago. This person is motivated by X. This person has a fear of X. What's really important to this person above all else is X, and their skills are this. Now, as I relate to that person, I've got some wisdom to bring to that, not just treating everybody the same. And I think those older, wiser leaders that are just amazing to watch in action, that's what they know. They know who they're dealing with at every point in time, and they know how to relate to them. And that's just a skill that's going to come with time. Now, I think I could be a chef, and I could cook, you know, 1,000 dishes and not pay attention. And I could burn 1,000 in a row just as easy as get good. And it's the same thing with relationships and with people. And friends, this is the people business. These are God's creations. If they're his, if they're Christians, they're his sons and daughters. And you want to treat them with incredible respect and dignity and skill and wisdom as you try to hone your craft and whatever it is that you're doing. Make sure that you're paying attention to the people part, this personal interactions. It's what oftentimes is going to be the difference between a really long and successful leadership run or one that is short-lived or just has a lot of collateral damage. So, Dave, any other parting thoughts?
No, that's on so this? Good, John. I think that, you know, if you're a young leader today and you find yourself making a lot of mistakes in this realm, don't be discouraged. Yeah. I think failure teaches us more than anything else. It's the best tutor when it comes to these kind of things. Mm-hmm. So don't keep repeating the same mistakes. And if you are, then learn from that. Like, how many times have you and I been around leaders who are blind to this huge flaw, and the way that they preface it is always, well, if people are offended by the way I lead, well, if that's a theme in your life over and over again, then you've got a problem that you're not addressing. So let's be honest about that. But learn from these things. And then the leaders that I so admire, that exactly who you're describing. They walk into any scenario, they kind of get it. When I press on them, like, hey, how'd you get here? Like, what's your secret? It shouldn't surprise anybody that they've learned over the course of time to be quick to listen and slow to speak. Yeah. They ask questions. They don't walk into a room and begin to speak. They're observant. They're quiet. They're taking it in. They're asking questions. They're figuring what the right response is before they do anything. And so that's so important. I think when you're young, you feel the I got to walk in to this room. I need to take charge. I got to lead with it. I got to say the most profound thing that's going to be said. And oftentimes when you do that, you miss people. Yeah. You know, you miss the opportunity because you're answering questions that aren't being asked. And so it's really good to ask questions, to be observant. And then again, don't be discouraged by failure. Failure is a great teacher. And I'm guaranteeing those guys that are older and gals that are older than us that have that, whatever that is that you've described, they failed a lot along the way.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And the Lord has used those failures redemptively to bring them to where they are today.
That's right. So it is, friends, this is a necessary skill. It's more fun to talk about things that you can implement right now and have, you know, massive impact and create a lot of smoke. But it is going to be this long obedience in the same direction. It is going to be the relationships, and it's going to be the way that you interact with people that's going to make the difference over time. And so a lot of times, because it's not as fun, the results are not immediate, we discount this one. And just, friends, just make sure, even if you can preach a great sermon, make sure you can still talk to people. You can still lead people. People want to be around you. And your own unique, you know, quirks and, you know, personalities, make sure that you, you're working on your interpersonal reaction. So, Dave, thanks so much, brother, John, as always.
Nice to be with you.
And we've got one more. I think we only have one more in this series. I feel like we can do 100 of these, but we'll shut it down after the next one. And then we're talking about just family and relationships,
right,
and husbands and wives and kids in ministry, which we did not talk about in seminary. So you have that one to look forward to. Friends, as always, if you have any questions or comments or really any ways we can help you, serve you, you can always reach us at clp@watermark.org. That's clp@watermark.org. We'll talk to you again next time.